Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
There would be literally millions of civilizations out there.
Well, if there wasn't, it'd be an awful waste of space.
Jodie Foster and Matthew McConaughey in 1997's Contact, which was based on a Carl Sagan book about humans venturing beyond the stars. Well, this week, we cast our eyes to the heavens and saw stars we had only imagined until now. The James Webb Space Telescope, more than 20 years, $10 billion in the making, has sent back its first images of our cosmos, and we got to see them this week. In a sliver of the universe, we can now see with startling clarity the history of the Big Bang unfolding in thousands of swirling galaxies, gigantic nebulae, colorful star clusters. Wow. So to help us marvel at the stars, we are joined on the line by Kelly Beatty. He is the senior editor of Sky and Telescope magazine. Kelly, welcome back.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Tiziana. And boy, you sound just as breathless as the scientists who unveiled these images yesterday.
Well, did it rock your world?
Absolutely. You know, we'll get into this a little bit more, but this is something that astronomers around the world have been waiting for 30 years. It's 30 years since this concept was put forward. And the take home here is that we're looking at the universe not only with more detail, but in a slice of the spectrum, the infrared spectrum that we can't see with our eyes, that our telescopes can't see from the ground, that had been largely hidden. I mean, we've launched spacecraft that studied the universe at infrared wavelengths before, but they weren't this big, they weren't this powerful or capable.
And why wait 30 years for this? What makes it worth it?
Well, okay, so it's 30 years because it's been a pretty rocky road for the Webb Space Telescope, actually. First conceived in 1996, at that time it was supposed to launch in 2007. That's 15 years ago. And then it went through a lot of design changes. In 2005, it went through a major redesign, which ended up being what we have now. And it took until 2016 and $10 billion to complete the construction. It's a very complicated instrument involving some technologies that really hadn't been invented when the telescope was first conceived. And because it is so expensive, you want to be very careful that you've done it right. I think a lot of listeners will remember that when the Hubble Space Telescope was launched in 1990, almost immediately at this point in its mission, scientists were about to unveil the first images, and they were aghast to realize that the telescope was not focusing all the light correctly. It was a huge problem, a huge scandal, and it took extra missions by the space shuttle to correct that. Now we have this Webb Space Telescope that is working even better than expected.
So let's pick that up. So I'm looking right now at our website, radioboston.org, where we've got one of the pictures, the Carina Nebula, right? Which looks like, I mean, it's magnificent. It looks like an orange foamy mountain range with a sky behind it more full of stars than I imagined was possible. What are we capturing? And describe it for us a little bit, Kelly, with these images.
That's a great description. So stars form in our galaxy and in every galaxy from clouds. Those clouds are rich in dust and hydrogen and other elements. And when the clouds compress, they literally, these stars form as precipitation, if you will, from the clouds. Our sun formed the same way. This Carina Nebula is in a southern galaxy that we can't see from here on Earth, and it's about 7,600 light years away. And what that means is that light has been traveling across space to us for that amount of time. We are seeing this as it existed before the pyramids were built. And so as these clouds condense and form stars, the stars light up. They're like flares that are hidden behind the cloud. We can't see them in visible light. Only with instrumentation that can see infrared, can see the heat, sense the heat from these newborn stars, can we really tell that they're all there. And that's what this first image is. The stars come to life, and they are intensely hot and lots of ionizing radiation, ultraviolet and gamma rays and all kinds of stuff that would be harmful to us. And they vaporize the cloud around them. And so they create a pocket of clearing.
Where they're like breaking through.
Exactly. And so we're seeing at this water's edge, if you will, where the edge of the cloud is, these hot young stars have eroded away the cloud around them. We're seeing not only these young stars for the first time, but also we're seeing stars still embedded in the cloud as little glowing embers that are about to break free themselves. It's just a remarkable image showing how stars form in our universe. It's a kind of a universal phenomenon. Our sun formed the same way. And by the way, our sun probably didn't form by itself. It probably formed in a group very much like this.
So my chuckle for today will be thinking about the Webb telescope and the phrase hot young stars, which was not quite where I thought we were going with it, but it's fun. And so here's the other thing that has been bending my brain. And I want to talk about it. So here's a little sound from President Biden, where clearly it bent his brain too. This is when he was speaking yesterday at the unveiling of the first photographs.
Light from the oldest galaxies, the oldest documented light in the history of the universe, from over 13 billion, let me say that again, 13 billion years ago. It's hard to even fathom.
It is hard to fathom, Kelly, and at one level I get it. But at another level, how is it possible that photos we took now are photographs of something that happened 13 billion years ago?
Yeah. So I mentioned the Carina Nebula, 7,600 light years away. The Webb telescope's biggest to-do list involve things that are relatively close by, like that nebula, like planets around other stars that we want to probe, and the very most distant things in the universe. Now, I think most people realize that the universe is expanding, but one consequence of that is that as light travels across the void, its wavelength gets stretched out almost like a spring. And so that
like
light
a slinky
might have,
that you're pulling from
like
one end to the
slinky,
other.
Like a slinky, a great concept, right? And when you pull the ends of a slinky, the little coils get farther apart. The wavelength stretches. And so light that might have left that very early galaxy as short, powerful radiation like ultraviolet has over time, over distance, become stretched out to the point that it's no longer even visible light. It's in the infrared. And so with the Webb telescope, we'll be able to look farther to see this stretched out light from galaxies that, as the president said, have traveled for 13 billion years to reach us. And that image that was released yesterday, I know we're trying to describe it, so please go to the Radio Boston website or to skyandtelescope.org for a fuller picture and the actual pictures.
Yeah.
That picture that was released is actually possible because there is another cluster of galaxies between us and those distant ones. That nearer cluster is acting like a lens and focusing the light almost like a magnifying glass of the even more distant galaxies. So those very distant galaxies are kind of distorted and, you know, misshapen in the image, but they are every bit as telling as if they were crisp and like perfectly proportioned. And they're showing us that galaxies that long ago, just, you know, 300 million years after the Big Bang, were already alive and kicking. And what the Webb telescope hopes to do is to see back even farther to the point
back
in
the
evolution of our universe, about 380,000 years after the Big Bang, when the first stars formed.
Okay, so I have goosebumps from that because that's really back to the beginning. Kelly, just briefly, there's this tension here, right? On the one hand, I feel like even though obviously I know nothing about this subject other than the wonder of it, there's so much we could learn if we really could go that close to back to the beginning. On the other hand, we live in a tough world and there's a lot to do. And it costs $10 billion to do this. So make the case that this was a good spend.
So, you know, everyone has something that gets their juices flowing. Obviously, for astronomers, you know, it's astronomy, deep cosmic thoughts. For a lot of us, it's great art or performances, or a garden that's blooming and, you know, fresh, warm tomatoes warmed by the sun. And so in this particular case, I think what this telescope is going to do is sort of raise our collective consciousness about what our place in this universe is. The Webb the Hubble Space Telescope gave us a taste of that, but we're really going to try to get back to the beginning here, and through that, get a better sense of how it is that we on this small planet around an ordinary, even dwarf star, our sun, in the middle of a large but not unusual spiral galaxy, the Milky Way, came to be. And I think that's the sort of mind-blowing, open-ended questions that the Webb telescope will fuel with its discoveries. Obviously, we're going to learn a lot of technical information about how the universe works and, you know, how these things came together. But for everybody here listening, it's why do we exist? How did we come to exist? These are the bigger questions that will be addressed as well.
All right, so that's the whole universe. Let's come right back to here. Do we, little Massachusetts in this whole universe, have a presence in what's going on?
Oh, for sure. People don't realize this, but the Center for Astrophysics in Cambridge, which is a joint organization between the Smithsonian and Harvard, has probably the largest concentration of PhD astronomers on the planet. It's like 300 working astronomers. Now, they're not traveling to distant places so that they can make these observations. The Webb Space Telescope is coordinated through a science center, if you will, outside of Baltimore. But when they want to use the Webb Telescope, and many of many of the astronomers here in our listening area, not just Harvard, but at Tufts and BU and other facilities, will be in a competition. We've heard these stories about, like, somebody is giving away a beautiful house in Maine overlooking the seacoast, and they'll give it to whoever writes the best essay for why they need this house. Well, that's what astronomers do when they line up to use the Webb Space Telescope or the Hubble Space Telescope or any major observatory. They make the case for why their observations matter. And in this particular case, they have to make a compelling argument that only the James Webb Space Telescope can answer the question that they're posing.
Amazing. Well, we will look forward to learning more about what they're learning. That's J. Kelly Beatty, senior editor for Sky and Telescope magazine. We wanted to talk to you about this. Thanks for joining us and sharing in the wonder.
A great pleasure. Thank you.